Welcome to the Kindle Chronicles, a Friday podcast all about the Kindle. My name is Len Edgerly, and this is episode 3, recorded on August 8, 2008 in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Today's What's on Your Kindle interview is with a man who wrote an essential book for Kindle users and people interested in the Kindle. He's Stephen Windwalker, and I had lunch with him and then did an interview a couple of days ago in Harvard Square. He's got lots to impart about the Kindle and its prospects and his intriguing journey as one of the early adopters who has really contributed to the knowledge and use of the Kindle. Before that, we'll go to Kindle News, and in Kindle News, I'm going to be talking about a couple of potential cousins to the Kindle coming in the newspaper world. Two very different views that have come out in the last week or so on the Kindle's prospects for sales and adoption. A cautionary tale, something that you want to make sure you don't do with your Kindle. And finally, an opportunity for a free webinar on August 21st that I think will be of interest to a lot of folks interested in the Kindle. For the Kindle tech tip today, I'm going to talk about a way to stream RSS feeds to your Kindle using book feeds, and that's a pretty powerful way to get content onto your Kindle for free, and I'll walk you through the steps on how to do that. We'll have a Kindle quote after the interview and a Kindle comment. In Kindle news, Germany and France are developing Kindle-like products aimed at newspaper readers. I came across this in a blog called Startup Meme, a technology blog on August 5th, and they report that the German giant Deutsche Telekom is working on a product called News4Me. And the idea is that you will be able to receive personalized electronic newspapers wherever you are. The News4Me information from Deutsche Telekom says the project aims to create an individual electronic newspaper. Subscriptions are possible to complete issues or to individual sections from differing newspapers, which will then be transmitted to mobile devices. The contents and layout adapt constantly to the way you read. In the future, wherever you are, you will benefit from easy access to current news and information which correspond to your personal interests. They mention a foldable or a flexible screen, and the same thing is true of the French version, which the company Orange is developing. And their product is called Read and Go, and if you go to the website, I'll have a link in the show notes, you can listen to a description of it in French. Here's a little bit of it. Notice how they're actually using the English words read and go, but in a French accent it sounds pretty sexy, as everything in French does.
Après la dématérialisation de la vidéo, après la dématérialisation de la musique, Orange aborde aujourd'hui la dématérialisation des contenus écrits avec Read and Go, le premier kiosque à journaux mobile connecté en 3G.
Neither the French or the German newspaper product is available yet, and I didn't see on the websites when they're expected, but they sound serious, and I'm sure they're going to be coming soon. I happen to know a guy in Denver named Dave Lester who lives in my building, and he has been working on a similar project for some U.S. newspapers. His company is called Treeless Systems, and I interviewed him for a podcast back in January of 2006 when he talked about it. And in looking back, I see that he has been working with E-Ink, which is the same Cambridge, Massachusetts firm that has created the screen for the Kindle. But his version of it, and it sounds like the same is true of the French and German versions, is actually going to be a flexible kind of a screen that you can roll up in your pocket and unfold and then treat like a regular newspaper. So these things are clearly coming. It's fun to think about what this might mean for the Kindle. It tells me that eventually the Kindle is going to face competition from other form factors for newspapers and printed media. And I can easily picture a time when the prices come down. If every one of these things costs several hundred dollars, you're not going to be having one of each unless you're a raging early adopter like myself. But I could see that you might have something that's like a flexible newspaper that you spread out on your kitchen table, and then you'd have other things that you'd load into your Kindle for going on the subway or a train or a plane, and or just, you know, whatever the setting would be. So it's going to be a variety of devices, and they're all being fueled by this same convenience of being able to choose your content, have it visible on this e-ink screen, which is so easy to read even in sunlight, and all the advantages that there are over newsprint, and not the least of it, which is saving some trees. So next item under news is two very different views of the Kindle's prospects. One article was on the WashingtonPost.com website by Eric Schoenfeld of TechCrunch. And on August 1st, he painted a very rosy picture of the Kindle sales and business prospects. He quoted Scott DeWitt, an analyst at Stifel Nicholas & Company, predicting that Amazon is on track to sell 500,000 to 750,000 more Kindles over the next four quarters, including this one. And this analyst estimates that Kindle owners will buy an additional $120 to $150 worth of books and content for each device, bringing the total revenues over that time period to somewhere between $225 million and $355 million. And based on that, when he wraps it all up in a bundle, he's valuing the Kindle as a billion-dollar business for Amazon. So even at the size of Amazon, that starts looking like a pretty important part of their business. Now, by comparison, you can go all the way to a very negative view of the prospects of the Kindle. An article that appeared in Wired by Liz Gunnison of Portfolio.com. It's titled, Kindle, or Is It Just Kindling? This is on August 5th. And she argues that the reported 240,000 Kindles sold so far represent, quote, a good portion of the total market for the device out there. She's suggesting that the only reason that there's been such a strong start to it is that Amazon has been advertising the Kindle on its homepage, so the millions of people that go to Amazon to buy a book are always looking at the ad for the Kindle. So her analysis is based on a pretty negative view of just how many people are reading, which echoes the Steve Jobs quote a while back when he basically poo-pooed the Kindle because people aren't reading anymore. And there's, you know, some support for that in the data. She says, consider that the literate population of the United States is about 270 million, and that according to a 2007 AP Ipsos survey, one in four people didn't read a single book in the past year. Of those who did read books, the average consumption was seven per year, too few by a long shot to warrant buying a pricey e-reader device. So later she says, the Kindle is not going to make a reader out of a non-reader. Few will say, gee, reading books and magazines was prohibitively difficult before, but now that there's a $359 electronic reader available, I'm going to start. It's a perfectly valid argument. She writes it really well, and particularly at the end when she gets to the inevitable comparison with the iPod, she says, designing the game-changing e-reader, it seems, is more like designing the game-changing harpsichord than the iPod. I don't know. I, of course, am more on the optimistic side, and part of it is that I've noticed in myself, and I've heard from other people, I'm reading a lot more books and because of the Kindle than before. It's easier. They're all in one place. It may be something to do with the novelty and the ease of pressing a button and having a book appear on it in less than a minute. And the pricing is pretty good. You know, every time I spend $9.99 on a new bestseller book or something that's going to cost close to $30 in print, it feels cheap. Now, I don't really want to look at what I've been spending with Amazon. So I think that's maybe one counter to her argument that the Kindle's got a modest future just because of the kind of demographics of readers. The big question, I think, is how is the Kindle going to actually change how we read. Third item under news is a cautionary tale. This is a sad one from a guy named Matt Assay, who's author of The Open Road on CNET's blog network. He left his Kindle on a plane to San Francisco. And he says, I left my Kindle on a flight into SFO on Monday night, and unfortunately it doesn't appear that I'll be getting it back. After a two-hour delay to my flight, I think I was a bit brain dead by the time we touched down, causing me to leave it sitting in my seat. So he half-heartedly suggests give a blogger a Kindle fund, but backs off from that pretty quickly. But says, seriously, I'm really bummed. It was proving to be such an excellent device. I was going to be giving this one to my parents in Argentina to help keep my mom up to date on her books, but the thought of buying another one grates on me. I wish Amazon created a self-destruct feature in the device so that I can ensure whoever picked it up gets no enjoyment from it. One of the commenters said that he can actually remotely switch his content to a new Kindle if he chooses to get one. So there is a way to handle that. One of the commenters on his article, who is listed as a username, The Decider, says had very little sympathy with his plight. He writes, LOL, no sympathy here. Spend that much money just to read books, you get whatever happens. Final item in news is a free webinar. This is set for August 21st at 2 p.m. Eastern Time. And the guy presenting it is Joe Weichert, who's the author of a really excellent Kindle blog called Kindleville. And I've been emailing him to see if I can get him on as an interview for a future show. The title of the webinar is Leveraging the Kindle, How to Maximize the Kindle's Benefits to Your Readers and Business. And the guest speakers are going to be Joe, and also, let's see, I guess he works at Wiley. He's listed here as Vice President and Executive Publisher, John Wiley and Sons. So that's August 21st, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time. I'll have a link in the show notes. Unfortunately, I'm going to be tied up. I won't be able to sit in on that, but it looks like it'd be something really worthwhile. And that's it for Kindle News. The tech tip today I heard about first in the comments to the podcast at thekindlechronicles.com, and this was a comment after Baratunde Thurston's interview in episode 1 from Marie 012194, and she noted that Baratunde had asked about access to additional blogs on the Kindle. He's subscribing to some blogs, and that's a very handy way to get blogs, but it does add up even at, I think it's $1.99. a month to subscribe. She wrote, please note that feedbooks.com has a new RSS reader download that allows you to download full RSS feeds to your Kindle for free. Click the news icon in the upper right-hand corner of the site. Baratunde wrote back, he looked at it, and at first he wasn't quite sure that it was going to work for him, but then once he had it figured out, he wrote, oops, I misspoke. There is an easier update method. It's not fully automated, but it will work from the Kindle itself. Spoke too soon. And then he provides a link and later writes, I was completely wrong. Feedbooks is incredible. I do have to manually ping the feed, but this all happens from the device. I may use a feed aggregator to get my fave blogs into a single feed and just create a few, like Best of Politics, Best of Energy, Best of Friends. Baratunde writes, holy cannoli, I'm free. So I wanted to check this out, and I've been experimenting with it. I have found some frustrations with it because depending on the feed that you work through this process, I found that some of the items were truncated on one that I used, and you never really know what the feed's going to look like until you get it all the way to the Kindle. But through some trial and error, it's clearly possible to get some great content flowing to the Kindle very easily. And I'll walk you through the steps here of one that I did, and you can find out how to do this at feedbooks.com. I'll have a link to the show notes. So the steps are, if you want to try this, you create an account at feedbooks.com, and from there you go to feedbooks.com/help/Kindle. Scroll down to where it says RSS feeds and newspapers, and you follow the directions for creating a feed or your own newspaper, which would be a collection of feeds that you want to put together. So as an example, if you want to put the New York Times front page feed on your Kindle with Feedbooks, which ends up being just like a paragraph. It's not the full story, but it gives you a quick look at what's in the headlines of the New York Times on any given day. You go to that same feedbooks.com/news, which is the upper right icon on the homepage. From there, you click on the Feeds tab. The other tab is Newspapers. If you scroll down, there's a bunch of popular feeds. The one I experimented with is New York Times homepage. So you click on the feed that you want to have show up on your Kindle. Then you'll see something that says subscribe to this feed, and you need to change the setting there to MobiPocket/Kindle, and then click OK. That'll prepare the feed for use on the Kindle. After that, you return to feedbooks.com/news, and you will see under the Your Subscriptions column, there's now NYT homepage or whatever the feed that you were going to be putting onto your Kindle. You click on that item, and a download box will come up, which is going to save the file to your computer. So you need to know where it's going to end up on your computer. On my Macintosh, it ends up on the desktop, and I'm going to need to know that for the next step. Once it's downloaded to your computer, you open up your mail program and create an email to your Kindle email account. Now, the way this, if you haven't used this, and it's a really great way to send Word documents or PDF files to your Kindle, they had originally said it was going to cost 10 cents every time you do it, but apparently it's now free. The Kindle email address that you use to do this is the first part of the email address that you use to register your Kindle, which is your Amazon email address. So mine is Len Edgerly, so my Kindle address is lenedgerly@kindle.com. If you're unclear about what your Kindle email address is for the purpose of this type of uploading to your Kindle, if you go to the Amazon site, click Your Account, and then go to Kindle Management, and then click on Manage Your Kindle, and then you'll see an item that says Kindle Email Address, and then that tells you what your email address is. So once you know your Kindle email address, you create a new email and send it to yourname@kindle.com, and then you attach the file that we just downloaded from Feedbooks. You'll notice that it has an extension of .mobi at the end of it. It doesn't matter what subject you put in the email, because the feed itself is going to determine how it shows up on the Kindle. Once you send that email, you wait for a minute or a couple of minutes, and then when you go to your Kindle on the homepage, you'll see that the new item is on the top of the list of your Kindle homepage. Now, one thing that's a little odd is it shows up just at the first item. A better way to see what's there in the feed is to press the menu button and then choose Table of Contents. And then you'll see each of the articles that's in the feed. And by scrolling up to them and pressing, you can go to any particular article that's there. Now, you have to, you can refresh this really easily. So if you've created a feed like this New York Times one, tomorrow what you would do is go in and choose it from your home screen, and then under the menu item, you need to go to cover. So you're going to the cover of that item on your list, and then there will be a link that says refresh. And once you do that, then it'll send a new one to you that'll have the new day's items from the feed. So it's not a completely automatic process once you've loaded one of these onto your Kindle, but it's a pretty simple thing each day to just go in and press that refresh button to get the new day's version of what you've created. So as I said, I think there'll be some frustrations on this depending on the feeds you're using, but it's clearly a really powerful way to get content to your Kindle. And what's great is that the Feedbooks people have, it's really prettied up. There's no weird paginating or hanging lines that when the text appears on your Kindle, it's very easy to read and just seems to work great. So that's the tech tip for today. And if you have any experiences doing that, I'd be curious. I'd love to hear from you about it and find out how you're using it. So a couple of days ago, on August 6th, 2008, I had the chance to meet the guest for today's What's on Your Kindle interview. We had lunch at Casablanca, a venerable Harvard Square eating place. And it turns out that this fellow and I were at Harvard at the same time, entered in the same class. He took a year off and graduated a year after I did. But so that meant that in April of 1969, on a historic night for the college, when the Cambridge and Somerville police came in to forcibly remove SDS protesters from University Hall, we were both there. I happened to be up and see the whole thing, and he was sleeping over in Greenough Hall after having had a late night. So it was pretty fun to share some of our experiences at the same school, and then to get into the Kindle part of the story. Now, his book, which is about Kindle tips, is currently number 10 in the Kindle bestsellers, and I want to point out that that puts it ahead of Oprah's Book Club item, Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth. So this is a book that if you're interested in the Kindle, you simply have to download for your Kindle and read. Here's the conversation that we had a couple of days ago at Casablanca.
I'm Stephen Windwalker, and I'm an author, and I've done a lot of publishing about the Kindle and also for the Kindle in the past few months since the launch of the Kindle back in November of 2007.
Now, tell us about the book on how to use the Kindle, the title and how people can get it, and what's the status of it now.
Well, I had done some writing about Amazon in the past, and when the Kindle came out, I quickly decided that I was the guy who should be writing about the Kindle for Kindle customers and eventually also for people who were considering a purchase. So I started writing really a few days after the launch of the Kindle in November 2007. One of the things I realized right from the start was that the Kindle is a great platform for excerpts, for articles, for short form publishing. And so as I finished material for the book, I made it available as an excerpt. And I originally called it How to Use the Amazon Kindle for Email and Other Cool Tricks. And the funny thing is that even though it's more appropriately at this point titled The Complete User's Guide to the Amazing Amazon Kindle, I've kind of had a hard time pulling away from that initial title because that's what people talk about.
But so you have changed. If you look it up now, it'll be under the new title?
What I've done is it still says How to Use the Amazon Kindle for Email and Other Cool Tricks, but then in parenthesis, as if it's a series title, it says the Complete User's Guide to the Amazing Amazon Kindle.
How successful has it been?
It's shocked me. The first month I sold 50, in December of 2007, I sold 50 copies, 50 downloads, I guess we should say. And I told my son I'd be happy if we got to 150 in January. I figured the Kindle as a platform was growing, so maybe I could triple my sales. And it went from 50 in December to 1,500 in January, which kind of blew me away. So far, in just over 7 months, we've sold 25,000 copies of this piece, this title. And it's still going strong, and I think it will continue to go strong because we packed a lot of content into it.
Now, I put up a question on the Amazon forum. I said I was going to meet with you, and what questions would people have? And I had a good one from a guy named EB, and he wanted to know, how did you discover all these tips? Did you just randomly press the keyboard trying to make things happen, or how did you find out, like, the Minesweeper game and stuff like that?
Well, I started asking questions. One of the things that I picked up on right away, I watched Charlie Rose interview Jeff Bezos on his show on November 19th or 20th, and Jeff was talking about a couple of things that caught my inquisitive interest, and one was this notion that it came with a a web connection built in, and that you weren't going to have to pay for that. And I thought, I've never heard of any company in this country doing that. And so that set me thinking, well, can you use it for email? And I sent off an email to David Pogue at the New York Times, who answers his emails, by the way, which impresses me. And I got an email back that night saying, yeah, absolutely, you can use it for any web-based email. So I thought, this was a few weeks before I got my own Kindle. So I really, and of course you couldn't, it was like the Prius in 2001. You can't walk into a Starbucks and even now and find a Kindle. But I got a lot of information in the first weeks from people who had them, and then I got my own. I was able to play it out a little more.
And that's when you figured out how to do the email?
Absolutely. I think it was first with David Pogue's answer to my email question, and then I began exploring.
How did you find out about the Minesweeper?
I think that was from somebody else's website. I set up Google alerts for Kindle for blogging and Kindle for news alerts. So anything that comes across the web on the Kindle will hit my inbox, and I try and give credit where it's due when I'm talking about features of the Kindle. There are a lot of people out there, like Mike Elgin has a great blog about the Kindle, and Joe Wickert has a great blog about the Kindle. I use other people's ideas and try and share them with the people who buy my pieces as much as possible.
So what's on your Kindle? What have we got here on your homepage? First of all, your homepage is how many pages? 14.
14 pages. Well, the reason for that is I really use the Kindle not only to read the New York Times every morning, which I do, whenever possible at the gym on the elliptical, but I also... I subscribe to a couple of blogs via the Kindle, although I also read a lot of blogs through Google Reader on the Kindle. And I read books on the Kindle. I've read Carl Hyacin. I've read Sue Miller on the Kindle. Sue Miller is the Senator's Wife, was the first novel that I bought on the Kindle. But I also am constantly sending manuscript material from myself and other writers that I work with to my Kindle, so that I can read that material on the Kindle, because I've come to count on it as my major reading device. It's not that I never pick up a book. I do. I'm reading The Kite Runner in a paperback that a friend gave me right now. But
so your first item here is TechCrunch. Is that a blog that you subscribe to?
That's a blog, and I do subscribe to it. It's TechCrunch lately has come out with some interesting numbers and projections about the Kindle's future, something I've been very interested in as a publisher. I happen to think that there are already 300,000 Kindles out there. TechCrunch, I think, says that the figure by the end of the year, I think they're saying, is about 240,000. But in any case, we're in the same ballpark.
Now, Wired is out with a new sort of debunking estimate on the size of the market. Have you seen that?
You know, I've seen a number of things, and I'm not sure I've seen the Wired one, but I've seen a number of things which have put the number down in the 10 to 50,000 range. Here's the problem I have with that. My book about the Kindle, which is currently number 12 or 13 in the Kindle store bestseller list behind...
Of all titles.
Of all titles, which is a wonderful mm-hmm. thing, and it sold 25,000 copies. Mm-hmm. Now think about the fact that ahead of it are these books about vampires and Spirit House by Christopher Moore and a number of things that you wouldn't think are going to have majority penetration among Kindle owners. So I have to believe that the 25,000 copies of my beta book that I have sold can't be more than 10% of the installed base. Mm-hmm. And so it's easy from that point of view to say that it's somewhere in the range of 200,000 to 400,000 Kindles out there, and I kind of arrived at 300,000 by late July for a couple of reasons. The other thing that strongly suggests to me that it's a higher figure in a way of triangulating back to the 200,000 to 300,000 range is that the Taiwan-based manufacturer of the display screens came out with an announcement in May that they were shipping 60 to 80,000 display screens a month, and that they're basically to two customers, Amazon, which was getting 60% of them, and Sony e-reader, which was getting the rest. So that suggested in May that they had sold about 200,000 to 220,000 then to Amazon. But, you know, I don't want to pin the tail on a particular number, but I do think that it's a significant enough number that that it supports 25,000 copies of my title, and I think it's going to continue to grow.
You know, the Wired piece was basically lowering the estimate or the prospects simply because there's so few people who read, and taking, you know, only one out of four people say they've read a book in the past period of time and things like that. And there was some clever line at the end of it that, you know, the Kindle is going to be the killer app for harpsichords or something. It's like a great device for a dying activity, which is sort of like the Steve Jobs crack that he made.
Yeah.
My experience is I'm reading more books, I'm buying more books. It's increased the amount that I read, and I don't know if that's weird, but I suppose the size of the eventual market does have to do, in some ways, with how many people are reading.
Absolutely. I think that it's interesting that Steve Jobs line. I have to say that there are a lot of people who listen to music. Reading a book is a different kind of enterprise, and it takes longer. It takes more of a time commitment. If it's somewhere in the range of 25% to 40% of people who read books now, that's not a negligible market. Out of 140, 150 million American households, you know, I guess that would be in line with the fact that Amazon claims 40 million monthly visitors. They've currently sold Kindles to far fewer than 1% of their number of monthly visitors to their site. If there's an upside that says that, you know, in time, 10% of the people who visit their site will either buy Kindles or buy some other device that will allow them to read Kindle content, then I wouldn't turn my back on that market. I don't even think Steve Jobs would turn his back on that market.
I think you're right. Okay, let's go back to your home screen. What else is on there? First of all, now you've followed your advice and you've put a photograph on there. Is that your son?
That is my son, and that's my son when he was about 5. He's now much, much older and more mature at 10. And one of the things that happens with my Kindle is that the fact that I've set those screensavers on there isn't necessarily great for refreshing the screen.
Oh, I see.
But it's all right. We get there.
Now, I have one question on that sort of a tech. There's a keyboard combination that will reset it. Does that do exactly the same thing as putting the paperclip or the pin in the hole?
No. Quite often, I mean, with my Kindle, and I think this happens with Kindles that have a lot of screensavers and that kind of thing, and maybe one that's been treated as roughly as my Kindle at the gym and so forth. The keyboard will freeze on me 2 or 3 times a week, and so I have invented this very sleek accessory. It's also sold as a push pin, but when I stick it into the side of my Kindle holder cover, mm-hmm. it becomes a Kindle accessory.
Patent pending.
A red push pin, so I can see where it is.
That's great.
In the dark, and I use it on the reset button, and that always works.
Okay, so let's take a look at your first of 14 pages of your Kindle homepage. We've got TechCrunch.
Amazon Daily.
Now, Amazon Daily, that's a blog that comes in?
Yeah, that's free, and that's something that Amazon sends, which I wish they'd make it a little more oriented to independent publishing and more interesting things than simply touting the bestsellers in the Kindle store, which they tend to do. Down here is something that's interesting. This is something that I have an intern working out of my home office this summer who's working on a book called How to Save Your Home in the Current Housing Crisis. And Rachel and I are working on that together. And it's something that we expect to publish for Kindle users in September and maybe as a paperback in October, because it's clearly a need out there.
And this is the manuscript, so this is how you keep track of the drafts?
That's right. She'll finish a chapter and tell me that she's posted it to Google Docs, and I'll take the Google document and send it to my Kindle at my windwalker@kindle.com address, and it'll be on my Kindle in about 10 seconds, and I can take it to the gym with me and read it before she comes in again and tell her what I like and don't like. So that works. I've done that with my own manuscripts and some other authors that I work with, and it's terrific.
Mm-hmm. Now, what else you got on here?
I've got, I briefly signed up on the day they were trying to trade Manny Ramirez away, I briefly, for just a day, signed up for a free trial of Over the Monster, a Red Sox blog, and nothing against them, but I get my Red Sox news in real time most of the time. But I was on the road that day, and I wanted to get up to date information on a potential Ramirez trade. So I signed up, and then I canceled 2 days later, but I did get the information. My son, by the way, for his birthday, he just got an iMac, and he has taught his iMac to say that Manny Ramirez is an overpaid wiener. I'm sorry. I hope.
That's right.
I hope that.
That won't hurt my general rating.
I don't know. The FCC may have problems.
Yeah. Now, one thing is, you've got 14 pages. There's no way to do folders, or you can search by.
It's a real problem. You can search. Right now, I have it set up so that it's in the order of most recent.
Okay.
I frequently also, when I'm looking for something, I'll go to, I'll redo the searches by title. Mm-hmm. But it's a real problem with the Kindle, and something that Amazon needs to fix in 2.0.
So if you got to be on the design team for the next hardware version, whenever it comes, what changes would you want?
Well, a lot of the changes that I think are important are things that would foster more community among Kindle readers, among authors and readers, among different hardware devices. One of the things that fascinated me when Bezos was interviewed by Chris Anderson at the BEA Expo in May, and he came out unsolicited and talked enthusiastically about the Kindle book content being more important than sales of Kindles themselves, and that it would be a logical thing for Kindle content to be available on other kinds of devices, whether it's the Readius or the e-reader or the iPhone. I mean, frankly, I'd love to see a marriage between Apple and Amazon in this area, and I think it makes perfect sense. It would make sense for the iPhone to be able to have access to the huge and growing content that's available on the Kindle compared to any other e-reader. And I think it would make sense for Amazon, although everyone has focused on the device, I have to assume that the device is less important than the content sales.
Which would fit their earlier expansive way of seeing their business strategy.
I think they're into the big tent, and they love the idea of the Trojan horse that opens up an entire market, and then they make it possible for anyone with a device to get at the content. I think it only makes sense, and I think it's something that you'll see more of with each new generation of the Kindle. You'll see some of the hard lines get blurred, and there are fewer distinctions between different categories of e-reader customer and that kind of thing.
Where do you think, if we're sitting down for lunch and we should just put it on the calendar a year from now, what will we be talking about regarding the Kindle, do you think?
I certainly hope that it will continue to be a platform for independent authors, independent publishers. I think that you're going to see sometime in the next year the reaching of a critical mass where publishers really decide it's time to get all in on this. I think that will come somewhere around the end of the year, this year. I mean, I know Simon & Schuster is greatly increasing its catalog, and that only makes sense. It will be a long time before the Kindle cannibalizes traditional print-on-paper dead tree book sales in any significant way. But I think that in the next few months you're going to see the balance continue to shift.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Steve. Thanks for your book, too. You gave me some real tips early on when I needed them.
Great talking to you, Ben. Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Steve for a great conversation, and I have made a note on my calendar for a year from now, August 6, 2009. I think it'd be fun to get together again at Casablanca and see how our prognostications hold up in light of actual events. Now I'm going to turn to the Kindle quote. This comes from a novel that I read. It's one of the first books I read on my Kindle after I bought it last December. It's Suite Française by Irene Nemirovsky. It's a novel with quite a background because the author wrote it in manuscript in 1941 and 42 during the German occupation of France. And she and her husband were both being hunted by the Nazis and ended up dying in concentration camps. The manuscript was preserved by her daughters, but they were ignorant of the fact that these notebooks contained a full-fledged novel, and they left it unread until 60 years later when it was published, and it's become quite a phenomenon generally with great reviews. So it's a well-told story. It's written in French and translated. So this passage I want to read is written, it's spoken by the protagonist Lucille, and this is during a period where she has formed a close attachment to the German officer who's occupying her home in a small village in France. And there's lots of coming and goings in the town during this period of occupation. This begins at location 5371 if you're following along in your Kindle. "Let them go where they want. As for me, I'll do as I please. I want to be free. I'm not asking for superficial freedom, the freedom to travel, to leave this house, even though that would be unimaginably blissful. I'd rather feel free inside, to choose my own path, never to waver, not to follow the swarm. I hate this community spirit they go on and on about. The Germans, the French, the Gaullists. They all agree on one thing. You have to love, think, live with other people as part of a state, a country, a political party. Oh my God, I don't want to. I'm just a poor, useless woman. I don't know anything, but I want to be free. Slaves," she continued thinking. "We're becoming slaves. The war scatters us in all directions, takes away everything we own, snatches the bread from out of our mouths. Let me at least retain the right to decide my own destiny, to laugh at it, defy it, escape it if I can. A slave? Better to be a slave than a dog who thinks he's free as he trots along behind his master." She listened to the sound of men and horses passing by. "They don't even realize they're slaves," she said to herself. "And I would be just like them if a sense of pity, solidarity, the spirit of the hive forced me to refuse to be happy." I really recommend that book, Suite Française by Irene Nemirovsky. Close with a Kindle comment, and if you have a comment, I'd love to hear audio comments. You could send an MP3 file to me at podchronicles@gmail.com, And you can also call the comments line at 206-666-2713. I'd love to hear about how you're using your Kindle or recommendations or tech tips you found. It'd be fun to get kind of a conversation going among people that are listening to the podcast. So here's a comment that came in by email from Bob Boykin from Bloomington, Indiana. He writes, "Thanks for doing the podcast. I just finished the first episode. I can really identify with Baratunde's experience. I listened to a lot of tech podcasts, and I had heard all of the negative press it was getting, especially about how ugly it supposedly is. All that changed on my last business trip. I was seated across from someone at the airport, and he was holding this device that from my viewing angle looked kind of exotic. It was not in a cover. When I learned what it was and saw that the price had dropped, I ordered one immediately. I use my iPhone for music, podcasts, and audiobooks, but thanks to the Kindle, I'm doing way more reading than I have in years." So thanks to Bob Boykin from Bloomington, Indiana. So, well, these sessions keep getting longer and longer, but I trimmed just a little bit from the conversation with Stephen, but wanted to keep most of it in its entirety. And, you know, that's one of the beauty of podcasting is the subject can, there are no absolute time constraints. I would be interested in what you think a good length of time for this podcast is, because it's taking shape in the first episodes, and I'd certainly be very open to responding to guidance on how it can be as good as it can be. Let's see. I think that's everything. I want to say that music for my podcast is Ra Monk by Yuval Monagat on the Variations in Time, a Jazz Perspectives CD by Public Transit Recording, courtesy of IODA Promonet. This is Len Edgerly for the Kindle Chronicles, reminding you to read different. I really appreciate you taking the time to listen to the podcast, and have a great day.